me. Ooh-wee, it's me. Ooh-wee, it's me. I ain't doing nothing but talking shit, so y'all gotta, like, you know, encourage me the whole way along. Ow. I ain't doing nothing but talking shit, so y'all gotta, like, you know, encourage me.
Like them big hairy balls, don't you?
Baby.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Don't touch that dial.
Yeah! What the frizzled motherfucking lizard ass cheeks is up? Yo, you're listening to your boy, Nestorius, the host with the most, with the flavor in your ear of Nestorius Public Radio. What's up? ¿Cómo estamos? ¿Cómo está la gente? ¿Cómo está? Yo, ¿cómo está? Konnichiwa. Konnichiwa. Yo, I just gotta say, I want to welcome my man, you know, my ginger friend, Rich Corbin, my old co-host. He's back. He's black. He's bigger. He's better than ever. He's chilling here in front of me in the newly improved We Play Radio Studios in the beautiful, shitty, gritty downtown Los Angeles, live from, direct from Boston. From Boston. What's poppin', G?
What's up, man? It's so glad to be back. I feel it's good to be back home, you know?
Home, huh?
Home.
L.A. is home?
Oh, yeah.
L.A. is home.
Gotta love it.
L.A. is home.
L.A. is home.
L.A. is home.
L.A. is
That's
home.
That's interesting.
La home. La home.
La casa.
Mi casa es mi casa, motherfucker.
Yo, it's been a couple of weeks since I've recorded an episode of Nestorius Public Radio, because I've been like, you know, on the go. I've been on the go. I was in Cuba for about 10 days. Then I flew to New York. And then I just want to, you know, give a little update before we get snizzled, before we start sniffing some logical juice. You know what I mean? Yeah. And then just about when I was ready to fly back to L.A., my sister-in-law called and told me that my brother-in-law had a stroke while they were in Cancun. And I was like, what? And, like, you know, the first thing you think is like, oh, shit. Like, I'm supposed to be going to L.A. tomorrow. Yeah. And, you know, I could tell that she really wanted me to be in Cancun. She wanted me to be there. And, you know, not for spring break or titties or anything like that, but because they don't speak Spanish. And right. Ironically enough, or coincidentally, or serendipitously, there you go, double dip.
Serendipitously,
I had my passport.
Oh.
Because I just came back from the Cuba town.
Right.
You know?
So you gained entry.
Right. Because normally, I mean, I wouldn't be having my passport. I don't need a passport to go to New York. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They know me there. I just show up. You know what I'm saying? I just show up.
You show them your NPR sticker and you'll be like, yo, come on through.
Yo, I just show up. I'll be like, big up, motherfucker. Your boy is in town. Reggamuffin. Big the fuck. Big the fuck up Queens, big the fuck up Brooklyn, big the fuck up Jersey City, man. You know, and they just welcome me with open arms. There's usually a parade and shit, and everything's, you know, groovy doovy.
Yeah.
But I was like, yo, the beautiful thing about the internet, and of course, if you have a passport, like, you can book a fucking one-way ticket, like, within hours.
They'll take your money.
Dude, within hours, but it was like $300. It was like, fuck. And as you know, I'm in all honesty, I was tired. I'm tired of flying, and I'm tired of the TSA process and the whole shit. I'm just really, I'm tired. I get anxiety as soon as I get into the airport and I see the log line, and I see these fucking rejects that have nothing, and they couldn't amount to anything.
Right.
Except take the fucking TSA test. You know what I mean? Like, they couldn't even get a burger fucking job at McDonald's. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so you go, and I'm like, oh, shit, I got to go through this fucking thing again. And so I take the flight, and I forgot it's like a four-hour flight, dude. I was like, oh, fuck. Oh, 4 hours. I was hoping it was like two and a half hours, right?
Right.
And, you know, once you get there, it's like humid. And I used to go to Cancun a long time ago when I was younger. Yeah. But then it hits you. You know, you're in Cancun. Cancun is no place to be flying to go to a hospital.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is no place.
Right.
And so I get there, I, you know, give my sister-in-law a hug, and I could tell she's relieved. And we go through the whole rigmarole week. Next morning, I go to the hospital. She's telling me, you know, he doesn't look good, so I'm expecting the worst. Mm. And I get to the hospital, and he looks all right. You know what I mean? He just had a patch on his eye because apparently the left side of his body kind of went numb and then he started seeing double.
Right.
So they gave him this patch so that, you know, he can reduce half of the double and just see from the single. You know what I mean?
Right.
But homeboy was in good spirits. He was like, "Hi, how you doing? I'm all right." I'm like, "Oh shit, Roddy's doing all right. He's fine."
Well, you know, I mean, you could be in bed. You could be in a hospital bed in, like, you know, Nevada, you know, but he's in a hospital bed in Cancun.
No, but can I tell you something? This motherfucker had a suite. It was like the presidential suite in the hotel that I, you know, my sister-in-law was staying at this all-inclusive 5-star hotel joint. Yeah. Like creme de la creme service, right? All-inclusive. With that said, they have 5 individual separate restaurants.
Wow.
You know, sushi, Thai, French, Italian, Mexican, uh-huh. seafood. I mean, I think they had like 7.
Wow.
And each one of them was completely different. And the service was impeccable, you know? So the first thing I noticed was, dude, this fucking room is like a penthouse in New York, you know?
Yeah.
So then I got to pick up her son at the airport and, you know, for all, just to give a little reference, you know, there's Cancun, and then south of Cancun, there's what's called the Cancun-Tulum corridor. And so, you know, Tulum is one of the ruins there, and there's a place called Playa del Carmen. When I used to go down there in the 80s, there was nothing there, like nothing.
Yeah.
Now they have these big fucking resorts, Ritz-Carlton, all this other bullshit. And so they want to charge you like 50 fucking U.S. dollars to go from the airport to this resort. And so 50, you know, dollars to go from the hotel to the hospital, which is a little bit further than the airport. Anyway, long story short, I'm like, fuck it, I'm gonna rent a car. You know, I tell this dude, as soon as you go to the airport, órale, ¿qué pasa? Un carro, un taxi. It's like, yo, chicle, quiere helio, hamburger, quiere un burrito, quiere, ¿qué tú quieres?
You sure you didn't go to TJ?
Dude, it's like these dudes are hustlers, and I'm like, yeah. I'm looking for a car. I couldn't even get back in the airport if I wanted to go to Hertz or something like that to rent a car. So this dude, before I could even say, nah, I'm good, he had a fucking dude on the phone. Like, yo, my boy got a rental car company. I'm talking to the guy. He's like, oh, yeah, what are they? I'm right here, man. I'm in the airport. He comes around. He picks me up, takes me like just 15 minutes off premises from the airport. Bam, I'm in this fucked up shack, and he's got one car. So anyway, he rents me the car.
Muffler, 3 tires.
Manual transmission. You know, it's
got a fucking stone on the fucking one of the, that's their backup wheel.
The thing is, it'd be good if you would have told me that the only car you had was a standard transmission because, you know, not everybody knows how to drive standard. Luckily, your boy right here knows how to fucking shift. You know what I mean? So I was like, yo, no problem. No problemo. Of course, the clutch was all fucked up.
Yeah, because they rented it to somebody before you who didn't know how to drive a stick.
Yo, that shit was like,
it's no problem. I teach you. Smoke, fire, you know? Death.
That's it. It was just like complete bullshit. So anyway, you know, we spend the day at the hospital that day. We go back, and they gave him an MRI. Imagine this shit. You're in Cancun. There's a neurosurgeon, a neurologist, and they have an MRI machine.
Damn.
Okay? For real.
Yeah.
And the hotel was like spank diggy. Mm-hmm. She was like brand new. And it was, you know, it was built like 8 years ago, they told me. But she was brand new. But think about that. A neurologist? So there's a lot of motherfuckers going down there and fucking having spasms and shit, I think.
Well, yeah, you know, there's like a lot of old people going on vacation down there. There's big money down there for that.
I guess. So,
or there's something in one of those 7 restaurants that's just tweaking.
I don't know, man. I don't know. So, you know, we go to the hotel. You know, we it was late. We get something to eat and we're chilling, you know. And the fucked up thing about it is you come to the hotel, it's like 5:00. These fat white American motherfuckers are laying on the pool on some lounge fucking rafts, all drunk. Because it's all inclusive. Motherfuckers, yeah. You know what they do? They sell these like 1/2-gallon jugs at the convenience store in the resort.
Right.
Like thermo fucking cooler, yeah. half gallon. Yeah. So they go
the kind
up to
of truckers
the, yeah, yeah, yeah. They go up to the bar.
Get the fuck
I swear to God. They go up to the bar.
It's the big Bubba Tubba, and dude, they're like, fill her up.
Dude, these motherfuckers are, and everyone is fat, white, bald. It was like, yeah, where the fuck am I?
I wonder where a better place for a neurologist would be.
Dude, I'm like, where the fuck am
Let
I?
Let me have another cup of stroke, please.
Yo, they got their yeah. They got a half gallon big gulp fucking thermonuclear fucking mugs. They go up to the, they don't even have to walk. They just like float right up to right. the pool bar.
It's like fucking Wall-E all
dude.
Over again. Wall-E, that movie Wall-E, that animated movie, you saw it?
Wall-E.
Dude, that is, yeah, yeah. Wall-E, that yeah. is a, that is the future. That's, dude. I'm telling you,
dude,
man.
Dude, it was ridiculous.
These people have no bones left. they're just gelatinous my
man,
masses.
My man, I'm looking at people. I'm like, is there one fucking buffed out motherfucker here? It was like, and yeah. there was like one black couple, and of course the black dude's got like more attitude than fucking Bed-Stuyvesant in Brooklyn. He's like, yeah, knuckle, I'm black. I don't give a fuck. Like the look on this motherfucking guy's face was right. like, I'm like, dude, you're in Cancun, man. You're on the beach. You're in the fucking Palapa. He's got, you know, these people got like they call it the privilege. Some of the people that go there all the time, they give them the privilege treatment. So, you know, you can book your own cabana.
Yeah.
Motherfucker's chilling out with his wife with the big titties in the cabana, and he's got the grill on like he's ready for a pit bull fight. I'm like, what the fuck are you? I don't understand this shit. And of course,
next one of these white land manatees come fucks with me.
Nah, man, look, they are not next fucking time, with you. All next right, one of these white fat land manatees with the half gallon big gulp. Look at me, all fucked up. I'm a fuck one of them niggas. Up, I'm telling you right now.
They're too sedated with Long Island iced teas yo, and fucking hot dogs.
Yo,
and,
but not one motherfucker looked like they went to the gym. Yeah. And in all defense, I mean, there were people there. There's a gym. The flip side of that is like, who the fuck goes to an all-inclusive place to go to the gym at 6 in the morning, right?
Right.
So, and I'll get to that shit. And I found out there was a gym there because, so you know, we get back to the hotel and we're going back in the morning to find out what's the result, what are the results with the MRI,
yeah.
right? Because no one wanted to tell me anything. And I'm kicking it in fucking hablo, que pasa, tú sabes, yo sé que yo sé lo que está pasando. You know what I'm saying?
Bravando, no, I don't know what you're saying.
You know what I mean? Yo vengo de aquí, I'm going to bravando, you know, 1, 2, 3, you better fucking give me the scoop. And everyone's like, no, we don't know. I said, well, where's the doctor? No, he's not here. And I'm ready to go buck wild and go, yo, check this out. I'm going to get that black dude from the resort. I'm bringing him here, and we're going to fucking rip this place apart. We're going to rip this motherfucking place apart. So yeah, I was getting attitude from this one administrative whore, and I could tell she just needs to have her hair pulled and slapped. But I didn't get into all that with her yet. You know what I mean? I said, all right, I'm going to come tomorrow. Next day, we drove down there. We come in there, and the doctor had come. And so my man Ronnie is sitting up, and he's like fucking bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. He's like, I'm okay. I'm telling you, I'm fine. Everything's fine. I can walk. I'm not even dizzy. And of course, you know, when somebody has a stroke or anything like that, you're like, yeah, right. Okay, yeah. You're just like a little in shock, yeah. Nigga. Sit down and relax. You know
no,
what
I'm
mean?
Fine. This didn't really happen. Nah,
you know what I'm saying? Like, put the insulin shit back in your arm and lay the fuck down. Okay, you ain't going nowhere.
Yeah.
Okay, so then they start talking and shit. You know, the son is there and my sister-in-law's there, and they're talking about like, you know, life shit. You know, mm-hmm. like, you know, do you have your affairs in order? Because yo, this shit happens. You know, you don't get a fucking email letting you know like, yo, tomorrow you're gonna get a stroke. Make sure that your bills are paid. You know what I mean? Shit happens. Right, you know right. what I mean? So they're having this conversation, and just around that time, Ronnie goes, he goes, no, it's the last 4 digits of the credit card. It's 3564. And all of a sudden, I'm like, this motherfucker is all right. I got 2 credit cards, just 2. I know this motherfucker got 8, and he knows which credit card and the last 4 numbers. I don't even know the last 4 numbers of my credit card.
You passed the test. That's the new stroke test. What's your driver's license number?
Dude,
I don't know. Another week.
Dude, I was like, yo, this motherfucker knows what he's talking about. So
he's good. That's good.
Yo, so I was like, okay, all right, he's fine. He's fine. Mm-hmm. So he says, the doctor said I can go home. I said, okay. So I go and I said, I want to still speak to the doctor. I want to know what happened. Yeah. Of course, the doctor, neurologist, he tells me what's going on. Everything's fine. Yeah. So, you know, there's no way to find out how it happened. It could happen to anybody.
Right.
You know, you could be fucking chilling out on Walrus fucking Island in the all you can eat inclusive fucking gobbledygook pool, and all of a sudden, a clogged piece of blood goes into your fucking artery and it doesn't go, and you get no oxygen, and it's just like, help me!
You start smelling toast.
You start smelling some burnt shit.
Smelling burnt toast.
You're like, wait a minute.
Your left arm starts doing the lumbata. Like, what the fuck is that?
You start seeing chupacabras instead of fat white dudes on the pool. You're like, wait a minute, I'm in the pool. I'm not in the all-you-can-eat breakfast buffet place. Why am I smelling butter?
Drop your big bubba gulp on the ground. Oh, fuck.
Why am I smelling butter? And they take your ass out and you wake up in this big lounge, right? So basically, I'm going to fast forward on this shit because this shit is crazy. So we go down and of course, you know, you got to pay your bill. Now, this is where it gets crazy, right? They got to wait for the bill. You know, before they treated you, my sister-in-law had to drop a credit card and like put a $3,000 deposit, right? You don't know how much shit's going to cost.
Right.
Anyway, long story short, 4 motherfucking days in the Taj Mahal of fucking hospitals, a neurologist, all the medication you need, right? Nurses, right? MRI, x-rays, okay? $7,500 fucking dollars. Fucking
Jesus.
Dude, it was ridiculous.
That's like a half day at Cedars-Sinai.
A half day?
Here's your name tag, $7,000.
A half day?
That's dude, insane. $7,000, that's it?
$7,500 fucking dollars.
Jesus.
Which, this is a public service announcement for Hospiten.
Yeah.
That's the name of the hospital, Hospiten. If y'all motherfuckers are planning on having a stroke or a heart attack or a fucking triple bypass or anything like that, take a fucking flight to Cancun, chill out, go to the wobbly boo pool and fucking book your fucking extended stay at the Hospiten. Trust me, the fucking hotel costs more money than this shit.
That's crazy.
Dude.
How do they do it?
Dude, my wife.
Is it volume?
Dude.
There's so many.
Dude, pesos, the pesos trend.
Right.
Yo, I don't know how they do it. I really don't know how they do it. I just got a bill. My wife had some gastro test reflexology shit. Mm. No lie. 2 fucking hours in this hospital. All this motherfucker probably did was gave anesthetize her throat and put a camera down her throat, right? Yeah. To see if her passages were fucked up or whatever. 2 fucking hours in the hospital, some anesthesia, a fucking video camera that I could have bought at the iFucking store at Apple and done that shit myself with an app. You know how much the fucking bill was?
How much?
The bill that they charged, the health, the insurance, came out to probably $15,000.
For that?
For that. $15,000, okay? And this is an in-house UCLA medical center, which they have a contract with our health insurance, the Directors Guild of America Motion Picture Health Fund insurance plan. So, you know, they get a discount, right? So there's a discounted rate. Uh-huh. So at the end of the day, it winds up costing about $6,000. The insurance pays about 75% of that, and then you pay the difference. Mm-hmm. But that's what they're billing. It's fucking rape.
That's crazy. I mean, I had shoulder surgery back in 2012, and my bill was about, I think it was about $15,000-$20,000, you know? And, you know, the fucked up thing was, though, is that it was in the valley in, like, like an office building.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Seriously, like they converted an office building into outpaced surgery.
Well, they have a fucking, they have a gurney in there that goes up and
down. That's not even on the west side. It's, like, in the valley, and it's still $15,000.
I know. I've had one of those joints. arthroscopic
That's
surgery.
Crazy. No, $7,000.
$7,500. I said, yo.
I'm going to go fake something. And
seriously?
Go
seriously?
I'm going to walk in with a limp just to get
seriously,
my
I
hip
said,
hurts.
It's March. I said it's March 17th.
Yeah.
Right? No, that was March 16th. It was a Tuesday. Because I, no, March 15th. I left on the 17th. It was a Thursday. Uh-huh. So here's the kicker. You know, since everything's fine, he can go home. Actually, that was Monday. So they said, you know, you don't have to rush home, change your flight. They were scheduled to leave Wednesday. So, Tuesday. So Tuesday afternoon, they chill out at the pool. Monday afternoon, chill out at the pool. Tuesday, they spend the whole day at the pool, and I drive them to the airport.
So they chilled afterwards?
They chilled out for a day and a half.
Okay.
Thank God. So I drove them to the airport. Of course, these motherfuckers flying out of Cancun at 6 in the morning. So I got to get up before. I went to bed at like 1. So I got no sleep on that shit. And I drove them to the airport. And I came back, and of course, I caught the sunset. So it was like, you know, and I stayed an extra day because, yo, we're in Cancun.
Right.
You know, I'm not fucking coming here, and then I'm flying to L.A. and not at least sniff some fucking Cancun beach. You know what I mean?
Exactly. You don't want to see, like, Cancun hospitals.
So my last day was good, but before I left that day from the hospital, when we got the bill, I was like, are you guys, you have an opening March... I told them like March 10th through the 16th of 2017. I'm just going to book it in advance just in case. just in case I get a stroke or a heart attack, I just want to book it in advance so you guys have a room available. I like that same room. It was ridiculous, dude. Anyway, as I'm coming back from the airport into the hotel, the sun's coming out. You know, I've never been up that early in my life. I don't think, maybe three times. You know me, I'm a night person. I see about 8 motherfuckers in the gym doing elliptical shit. I'm like, it's one thing or another. It's wobbaloo motherfuckers on the pool, or these like 7 or 8 health nuts that you won't see in the pool because they go on these excursions and
right,
shit.
Right, right.
You know, they do the pool, they eat, and then they're on the bus at 9 doing all sorts of things. Anyway, that was my crazy expedition after Cuba, you know, for. So I was gone for like 21 days. Anyway, I just had to get that shit out of the way.
Yeah.
So how are you, Rich?
Oh, man, it's good to be back in L.A.
About you, Rich. When did you go to Boston?
Oh, when did I go? June.
June
16th is when I landed.
We had a little farewell party at the bowling alley.
Yeah, that was cool.
June what?
Corbin Bowl. June 16th. I landed at 3:54 p.m. You know? And, you know, I hit the ground running. I was fucking working, you know, 7 days a week for 2 months.
I know.
At this first job I was working at, which was just, man, it was just, no, you know what? It's good for like, you know, it's good for like youngsters and all that.
Dude, I spoke to you a couple times a week because I knew you were on the cliff looking down going, there's no point. There's no point for me to go on. I sense it. I have Rich Dar. Okay. Trust me.
It was
ridiculous. You were working 7 days a week and clocking like fucking $15 an hour.
Oh, it was terrible.
It was ridiculous. Seafoods.
Yeah. place, you know, whatever.
Which, you know, it's Legal Seafoods is good to visit.
Yeah, it's good to be on the sitting down side of the dining room.
But it's not good to be working there.
Nah. Yeah. It's a great place to start. There's a lot of kids there starting out, mm-hmm. you know, doing their thing, mm-hmm. whatever, waiting tables. They're in college, stuff like that. So it's great, you know. I mean,
these are the new fucking Steve Jobs, and in about 3 years from now, they're going to be clocking $50 million buying the fucking restaurant.
Maybe, hopefully.
That's how it is these days, man. It's just, you know, everything that you learned in school, when we were in school, is complete fucking useless bullshit. It doesn't apply.
Right.
None of it.
Yeah.
None of it. Yeah. You and I got out of high school and college without even knowing how to fucking fill out a loan application. Shit that's pertinent to fucking life as an adult, never were you taught any of it?
Right.
How to fucking fill out a mortgage application.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? How to negotiate space with your fucking
wife.
That's
or your
girlfriend.
So many people get fucked on shit that. Yeah. They got to teach you how to buy a car, how to fucking have a kid, how to not drop the kid, how to buy a house, how to do all that.
Space,
how to negotiate stuff.
Space within your apartment with your wife, with your boyfriend.
How to deal with
girlfriend.
The phone company.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
How to do that. Like build up some social skills. Yeah. Yeah, not fucking, you know. Yeah. And look, science, I think science is very important too. I mean, it's...
Is fine.
Science is extremely... No, it's extremely important. Give you a little broader view on that. But, you know, you just... It's just too much on just useless stuff. It's not, you know.
No, science is fine. There's nothing wrong with comprehending the way things work. But I mean,
at the end of
the
day, your mind.
What you need to know is how things work.
Yeah.
On a day to fucking day basis. Right. I mean, as you get older, there are certain things you need to know.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, there's no education for that. Life is the education. You have to go through it once to learn it.
Right.
You know what I mean? And when you're going through it, it could be a pain in the ass. So we were talking a little earlier about expectations and looking forward to shit. And sometimes I had asked you because, you know, you had a really good job here. I mean, when I say a really good job, you had a good job.
Yeah.
Right? You weren't a fucking nuclear physicist making $500 million a year, but you had a job.
Close.
But I mean, you had a job that you were happy with. You were content.
Mm-hmm.
You look forward to going to your job. It wasn't one of those jobs you're like, oh, fuck.
No, I look forward to it.
I go online sometimes looking for like what kind of employment is available, something that I might be interested in. And everything is like $10 an hour, $15. Right. What the fuck could I do with $10 an hour? What the fuck could I do with $15 an hour, days a week?
You could stack pants at Banana Republic.
No, I'm saying with the check, what could I do with that?
Okay, nothing.
You know
what I'm saying? It's unbelievable. You know, it's just, you can't buy, you could barely rent a fucking apartment, in Los Angeles, anywhere
rent
else.
Rent an apartment. I mean, anyway.
You know, you're going to have, you know.
So when you were going to Boston, I had asked you, like, why do you want to go there and stuff like that? And you were talking about how you were stuck, on your day-to-day here in Los Angeles. You weren't really doing anything to further your acting career. You weren't really pushing yourself.
I was just going through I was just stuck, like not in a rut or anything like that. I had a good, like, I just had this, like, what do you call it?
So
I
you
was
were just comfortable.
Yeah, I was comfortable.
You weren't challenged. You weren't fulfilled.
Right. You know, and I felt like if I wasn't going to do it now, then I'd never do it.
Yeah.
And look, looking back, it's hard to like keep your fucking, neck from careening behind you, looking like, oh, what did I lose? Life was so easy and all that. But, like you said, you gave me a wonderful, wonderful gift before I left. You gave me that plate to put my keys in that says life begins at the edge of your comfort zone.
Oh, yeah.
And
Could you give me that plate back?
I'm living like a motherfucker.
I gave you that? Could you give me that plate back? Because I need to look at something like that on a daily basis.
It's nice. I keep it right there on the edge of my desk. Well, I see it when I walk into the office. Well, but no, and so it's tough not comparing. It's really tough. And that's the hard part, is not looking back and trying to look forward and don't feel like you lost anything, even though, it's not losing. I'm trying to keep, but it's hard, because I get distracted, if I see, lint,
that's
floating around in the
that's
sun.
That's what I was going to say.
If I see lint, if I see dust in a ray of sun, I'll watch that for like 10 minutes, and just space
but
out.
It's not just that.
No, it's drugs required.
Here's the deal. When you're an artist, right?
Yeah.
It's very difficult to become fulfilled unless you create, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you create, you get a sense of purpose, you get a sense of accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
Thus, you get a sense of completion, you feel complete.
Yeah.
I'm not saying for your whole life, but increments of feeling complete. And I think that That is the key to happiness. That's mm-hmm. the key to happiness. I'm not saying that's going to make you happy for the rest of your life, nah. but happiness comes in moments, in right. spurts, mm-hmm. right? And I think that when you don't have anything to look forward to, or you're not like creating something, or you're not fulfilled mm-hmm. doing something, then it just becomes the same. Oh, here's 8 o'clock. I mean, you know, there comes a point in your life, right, where let's say you have a good job, right, mm-hmm. and you start making good money, and I'm talking right. about, you know, from that kid that can live on $10 an hour at Legal Seafoods, let's mm-hmm. say, to the point where you're like 20 something, 30. I don't know what it is for anybody, but for me, and I don't know what the age was, mm-hmm. but for me. You know, well, for me, it was when I became an electrician, right? Mm-hmm. I was making 40 fucking something dollars an hour mm-hmm. straight time at yeah. 35 hours a week. I was clocking fucking dollars. All I had yeah. to do was show up. And for lack of a better comparison, it was basically those big, fat, white, bald motherfuckers with the big gulp cups that were on the pool at that all-you-can-eat
the
place.
The land manatees. With hard hats on.
On ladders yeah. without the big gulp, right?
Right.
And so here I was making this money and I was not fulfilled, right?
Right.
And so then what happens is like, so you run out of underwear and then like Wednesday, oh shit, I got to do underwear again. So then it becomes, oh shit, Sunday, oh, I got to pay the bills again. And it just becomes this cycle mm-hmm. of like bills, writing checks, doing underwear and going to work. And it's just like, where is the fulfillment? Where is, and I don't know. And I think that's where you know that you're different in terms of you're an artist or you're not normal. Right? Because most of these guys I worked with and most people, they're fucking happy with yeah. just doing that and going home right. and they're okay. They have normal lives. They have wives, they have kids. Me, I'm ready to fucking jump off a cliff. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so then you have to, it is your responsibility to find out what that thing is right. that's gonna bring you fulfillment. Mm-hmm. And that's where the fucking channel, the challenge comes in.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because
find that spark to ignite that fire to get you going in the direction that you were meant to go in.
Yeah, but then
it takes a lot of self-exploration, a lot of trial and failure. You know?
Yeah, but it's a double-edged sword, right? Because when you're here, I'm talking about you now, when you're here and you have a job mm-hmm. and you're making good money and you know everybody and everyone's, you know, we went to your old job last night, yeah. you know, and I'm going to say the name because it doesn't matter, right? It's one of my favorite places.
I might go back.
It doesn't matter.
It's one of my favorite places in the world.
Rich used to work at the Magic Castle, which is the Academy of Magic Arts and Sciences here in Hollywood. And this is where the fucking best of the best illusionists and magicians go to train and to show off their wares.
It's like Mecca for magicians.
It's Mecca for magicians. Yeah. And so it's a membership club and, you know, there's a restaurant there. It's a fucking, dude, I've been there, I don't know how many fucking times, 8, 9 times, man. And it never fails. I will get my fucking brain exploded inside yeah. It's some shit. I mean, the kid last night, 21 years old, unfucking believable.
Yeah.
Seriously, mm-hmm. there's no way to explain
right.
this fucking kid.
I know.
At 21. Yeah. He must have been making.
See, I know how he did that. Yeah. No.
You came over to me trying. I'm like, shut the fuck up.
I'm like, wait a minute. Maybe I don't, because what I'm saying doesn't even make sense.
This motherfucker was making diarrhea disappear from his fucking diapers at the age of fucking 6 months, having it fucking pop up in his fucking mother's panty drawer. Just this dude was doing shit like, yeah. what the fuck? Fuck are you talking yeah. about, dude?
But he was so smooth.
Oh, he was smooth.
And so like just calm.
He
and
was
like
smooth. Like, you know? like and I'm thinking, what are you fucking, I stopped doing drugs.
He popped out with like a fucking magic wand and a top hat. Nah, nah.
No, it was ridiculous. Anyway, you worked at this place.
Yeah.
This place has some sense of prestige. You know, everyone knows you. We went back there and you haven't been in, what, 6, 7 months?
And 9 months.
9 months. And everyone yeah. was like, oh, shit, Rich. And I could tell you were in your element. And I could tell that a part of you missed that. You know what I mean?
Oh, my God. It was like, you know.
I
was crying so much
yeah.
on the inside.
I get it. You know? I get it. I fucking get it. And so, you know, to bring it to the present. So you're in Boston. You know, you challenged yourself to do that. And I'm
Well, just getting out there was a challenge.
Dude, yeah. I wholeheartedly applaud you. Seriously, and I mean that sincerely as a brother, right?
Yeah.
Because I know you. I love you. You know, we're like, you know, like, yo, we're like this and like that and like this and like this and like that and like this and, you know, yeah. And like, I know you, you know me and yeah. that type of shit. And I applaud you because... You know, like you said, moving somewhere new is a different stuff. Moving somewhere new to be with your girlfriend is another fucking thing because, you know, you guys have never lived together. Then mm-hmm. you got to start a new job. You got to find new friends. And, you know, what I saw this do for you is that you started even further exploring being outside of your comfort zone. I mean, you started doing stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
Like mm-hmm. how many months ago was that?
4 months ago.
4 months ago. And you've been hitting open mics?
Yeah. As much as I can, you know, trying to push myself.
Yeah.
So it's great.
Yeah, no, that's no fucking, that's no small feat. What the fuck? I'm just,
you know, it's.
Sorry about that. I keep hitting.
I feel, I don't know. Cause, you know, being an actor and all that, I'm not afraid to be in front of people and say stuff. You know, I can walk and talk yeah. in front of people,
yeah.
you know, unlike I can't sit down and talk into a microphone right now, apparently, but.
Right.
Well,
got a few minutes. You can practice.
It's fun. It's, it's fun. Well, I just felt like I couldn't do it out here because everybody and their mother was doing it. You know, it's like if you're an actor and now you're going to try this stand up and this and that.
It's interesting.
You know, I've been around it. I hang out with you, you know, when
I have a love hate relationship with stand up. It's a fucking.
Exactly. And I'm sitting here like bad mouthing it because I haven't even done it. So, you know, I should, you know, shit on me because it's like, you know, I had my own perception or preconceived ideas about how it is. And I was, you know, oh, hecklers or, oh, you know, all those guys are assholes and this and that. And that was the biggest thing. I was more afraid of the actual environment, you know, rather than standing on stage telling a joke and getting, you know.
Right.
Listen. Not getting any laughs. Because that's every day.
Yeah.
You know?
The stand-up comedy as an art form is... unlike anything else for many reasons. You know, if you have a sense of humor and you're born to make people laugh and entertain people, you know, getting up on stage, I mean, you do that all the time. At your job or walking down the street, you do it all the time.
Yeah.
So that's really
well, so
not,
do you.
Of course.
Right.
But that's not the challenge. The challenge is navigating the infrastructure mm-hmm. of that. And the interesting thing about stand-up is that, for instance, you've never done it before, but once you do it, like, you pop your cherry, and then it's like, oh, fuck, that wasn't no big deal.
Yeah,
I'll do it again.
Right.
And you show up, and you do it again. Mm-hmm. And you show up, and you do it again. And that's pretty much the mechanics of it, you know? Mm-hmm. And, some people are born funny, you know? And some people are, you know, textbook funny, meaning notebook funny, right? Simon used to call, you know, comedians, Simon Kaufman, our old comrade on the NPR,
S to the K to the N.
And. So we used to talk about, like, you know, the notebook comedians that, you know, normally on a day-to-day, they're miserable, shit-faced. They got nothing pleasant or funny to say.
Right.
But they go on stage and they have a little notebook and they work all day on writing jokes and shit like that. And you know, that works. That's fine. I mean, mm-hmm. there's different types of comedians. And then there are people who are just, you know, full of life, full of energy, always making people laugh. It's just who they are. You know what I mean? You're mm-hmm. one of those people. And so that's a different type of comedian, you know? It's like, so part of it is, or at least the beginning of it is trying to find your voice, right? Your persona. Yeah. Who mm-hmm. are you?
Right.
Not, I mean, I know who you are, Rich, you're my boy, but who are you? Every successful comedian has a voice, has mm-hmm. a persona.
Yeah.
And that's not something that somebody can give you.
Right.
That's not somebody that I can say, listen here, Rich, this is your persona. This is who you are.
Right.
That's something you got to come into. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And doing stand-up repetitively gives you the ability to find your rhythm.
Mm.
Which is, you know, helps you find your voice and your persona.
You got it. But as I'm finding out, though, too, is that you have to relinquish the control that you're trying to give, you know, like, I want to try, you know, like, you have to be a little self-reflective.
You have
to be self-reflective on it and be, you know, not self-critical, but just self-aware, I'm finding out, though, too. And
how do you mean? Self-aware of what?
Well, I mean, if you got something in your head, you think it'll work, you go out, you try it, it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. You know, from what I've known, okay, I'll try it again. I'll try it this way because, you know, like when I first started, I was, you know, I'd wear a hat and, you know, I dress differently and stuff like that. And I'm like, I'm going to try it with the hat off. I felt more comfortable with the hat, not wearing this hat that I wanted. I'm like, I had it in my head.
So
I'm
going to wear this. So like, you went in Boston. With the image of what from the outside the comedian could look like.
Exactly, like how I wanted to, you know, perceive. You know, how
as
I
if
wanted
that was
to be
your
perceived.
Persona.
Right. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. I didn't have anywhere to go.
Right. That's all right.
Are we knocked out?
No.
Oh, okay. So.
No, we're good.
Was the right ear, but that's kind of what did you know, and then it's just kind of give way to all of your preconceived ideas or whatever, work mm-hmm. on your stuff mm-hmm. and just make it, you know, just feel real to you,
right?
You know, feel real to me, and also I found that you know, I can sit and write, and I wrote my first, you know,
5 minutes.
Or 12 minutes. I had about 12 minutes
which
written.
Winds up being 5 minutes when you cut out when all the fat.
Yeah, exactly. You know, all the extraneous
when you
story.
When you cut out all the and the but and you know what I mean? And yeah, right. And have you noticed and, you know, like, yeah, exactly. And mm-hmm. and all that other stuff. You know what I mean?
Drizzle it down. But
But, which is a really, really interesting art form. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, I listened to your set, you know, your early set right. and you know, I thought your premises were funny. I thought it was funny. You know right. what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's
Thank
interesting.
You.
And it's interesting to listen to somebody knowing you, right? Mm-hmm. Because your material is going to come from your perspective on life. You don't need to write. You can't sit like shit comes out of my mouth sometimes based on my perspective on things. Right. I'm making a commentary mm-hmm. on how fucking stupid people are, how ridiculous right. things are, and. Mm-hmm. As I'm talking a lot of times, things just, oh shit, that's a funny concept. I might write that down. Mm-hmm. And then you go on stage and you try to develop that into a bit or a joke, you know, a joke and right. then into
it's just,
a bit.
It's just an idea that you, for me, it's like an idea. You know, that thing that you heard, it, you know, it was about tattoos. Dude, I wrote right. that sitting on the steps waiting for my laundry when I saw some kids walking by and they're in their 20s with tattoos. Right. And I just thought to myself, man, have they not seen old people with tattoos?
Right.
You know, and then they look like a Persian rug that sat out on the patio for 10 years. And that's, and it developed from mm-hmm. that to where this whole thing, and, you know, and I thought that was a good idea, you know, but.
One of the challenges I see you having though, as a comedian is that you look like Louis C.K. So it's kind of like,
yeah.
So it's kind of like, you know, like, it's almost as if, you know, Richard Pryor was your dad. What are you going to do different? No. I'm saying it's very difficult. I mean, Chris Rock, right?
Oh, yeah.
His brother, Tony Rock, right? Tony Rock is a fucking brilliant. Mm-hmm. He's hilarious. Mm-hmm. And he's got nothing in common with Chris Rock. Like, I mean, as far right. as sense of humor, they don't even look alike. He doesn't act like him. And to his credit, he's never ridden his coattail. You know, they're two different people. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, you'll see Tony Rock and you'll be like, oh, shit, that's Chris Rock's brother. Chris Rock has a brother mm-hmm. and he's a comedian.
Right.
You know, like Charlie Murphy, Eddie mm-hmm. Murphy's brother.
Right.
You know what I mean? Now, Charlie Murphy comes off to me as someone who, you know, writes sketches and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I've seen him perform and he talks about how he's Charlie Murphy's brother and, you know, his experiences on, you know, the Dave Chappelle show and this right. other. And
which
this
was fucking hilarious.
Very hilarious.
Oh, my God.
Very hilarious. And so, you know, I actually think anybody with perseverance and with the ability to sit down, write, and stuff like that, could actually do stand up and be somewhat successful, right? I think I can read a book and
follow the rules of comedy.
That doesn't mean you're gonna make it per se. I mean, it takes a I don't know. You know, you were turning me on to riding in cars, getting coffee with comedians.
Yeah.
With Mel Brooks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mel Brooks is a fucking genius.
Mm-hmm.
A fucking genius, mm-hmm. okay? And I had the pleasure of watching Blazing Saddles, okay? A movie that came out in the 70s,
yeah.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I watched it live with a predominantly Jewish audience in Tarzana.
Mm-hmm.
No, Thousand Oaks, excuse me. And it was, dude, it was fucking hilarious. It was just like one fucking thing after another. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant writing. And you think about something that's written in the 70s to be 2016 and the shit being hilarious as well, just as good right now. And then he comes out on stage and he starts telling us stories about how he made the movie and all that other stuff. And so the other day when we were driving and I saw Driving in Cars with Comedians with Jerry Seinfeld, and he had Carl Reiner and
Mel Brooks.
Thank you. I forget my name. And Mel Brooks.
ADD and me. Let's go ride bikes. I can't keep one thought in my head at a time.
Because I'm all over. So Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner, which was interesting, talk about ADD. Carl Reiner couldn't get a fucking word in edgewise in that whole thing. Yeah. And it was just Mel Brooks. And one of the things that Mel Brooks said that was genius was that, I don't know what's funny, but if it makes me laugh,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's funny and I'm going to make it work.
Right.
Right. Which is kind of like goes back to your perspective. Right. So you thought that was funny about the tattoos. You thought that was funny
mm-hmm.
and it was funny to you.
Yeah.
Right.
And it was actually the person who laughed the most out of however many times I did it was a tattoo artist.
Right.
You know,
he's
like a local tattoo artist, and he went up before me and they're like, and here's the local tattoo artist from Halston. Go check out his shop.
And
I'm like, oh, fuck, I'm going to go up after him. Right. And so I looked right at him and I'm like, remember there was a time when the only people who got tattoos
and he was cracking up.
And he was like, just started laughing.
No, but here's the thing, right? So with that idea in mind, right? So your job as a comedian, right, is to enlighten people to your perspective mm-hmm. and why it was funny to you. You see,
mm-hmm.
why is shit is funny?
Yeah,
right. Of course, sometimes things are funny to you and they're not that funny to other people. And you may not want to pursue it. You want to say, you know what, this is too much more work than I care to invest in enlightening you as right. to why this is funny. But for the most part, that's where you start off. Mm-hmm. So that was that's the thing I got out of what Mel Brooks said.
Yeah. Then there's the technicality of it or the technical aspect of it. Cause I watch a lot of, you know, shows on comedy and watch a lot of comedians
yeah,
and all
you
that.
Do. You do.
I love it. You know, it's something that I've always held. It's like a pure, it's so pure. I didn't want, you know, that's another reason why I almost didn't want to do it, because I think it's such a pure art form that I didn't want to taint it with my bullshit, you know, my shitty,
but also
you know,
listen to
horrible
a lot
ego.
Of fucking stand-up comedy, man. I can't listen to stand-up comedy because then every single premise that I come up with, I feel like, oh, he just did the joke.
Yeah, but with all the comedy that I've listened to, or you know, and I, that's not even anywhere near what other people might be listening to, because
right.
you know,
right.
oh, have you heard of? No, I haven't heard of this person. Oh, yeah,
right.
But there's an overlapping, like they'll touch on the same subject and they'll just tell the same. Not the same joke, but they'll just have a different perspective of it, or different, you know, different. And,
yeah,
and
no.
that gave me a little bit of like, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, they're not going to call him out if it's like, oh, so-and-so did this, you know, unless they do it word for word.
But what happens is, boy,
you know,
is,
oh, you got a bit on traffic, you got
no,
a
no,
bit
what
on.
What I'm saying is you listen to a lot of stand-up comedy, so that could be an impediment to your process, to your joke. For instance, if you have a premise that you think is funny and you listen to, say, Bill Burr mm-hmm. says something, and Bill Burr is a genius in the sense that I can't listen to Bill Burr.
Right.
Because I identify with Bill Burr.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Burr is like George Carlin. And those are the types of comedians that I identify. That's my mm-hmm. you know, that's my persona.
Right.
So if I have a concept or a perspective on something and I listen to him, I'm fucked. There goes that joke. I can't, it's hard for me to like,
right.
you know,
unravel
from my perspective, right?
Right?
Now, I'll let a joke unravel from my perspective and I'm like, oh shit, he did something that was similar to that or
mm-hmm.
whatever, but it wasn't his joke, right?
Right. Well, I mean, I've watched enough, you know, I've watched a few interviews and stuff like that, and they, you know, they were talking about when they were first starting out, you know, and I'm really interested in, you know, in the, because I'm just starting out and all that. So I like listening to how did they start out? Did they bomb? Did they not bomb? All that stuff.
They all bombed.
And yeah, you know, you don't get any jokes because how can you when you've got an audience of like 15, 20 comedians that don't laugh at anything anyway because they're already stuck in their head? Because these open mic nights, there might be four girls that accidentally, you know, got stuck in there or just didn't leave before everybody showed up. But here's the thing, you know, I listened to this one kind of sits in my head too, is that and I forgot who it was, like Chris Rock or somebody. They're like, you know, when I first started out, I was doing, you know, I don't think it was Chris. I don't know who it was, but so don't quote me on any of this. But it was a comedian. He was talking about, he's like, yeah, I'd go up there and I would do my you know, I'd be doing Richard Pryor. You know, my first like 10 minutes would just be pretty much Richard Pryor because that was a big influence on this person, whoever it may be, because I can't remember. But they're like, I, you know, that was a big inspiration. So they listened to so much. So they kind of just, that was their starting ground. So they, you know, until they found their own voice, but they learned the timing or maybe they had the confidence to go up there and do that because, you know, however you want to call it, but they were saying, you know, I was so influenced by that. I wanted to do that. Their style, you know, they were talking like Richard Pryor or somebody was talking like Eddie Murphy or something like that.
Right.
And I was like, oh wow, that's kind of interesting, right? that other people like that until, and if you keep going with it, you will eventually find your voice. Like you told me.
Yeah. The thing about one of the most interesting sets that I ever watched, speaking of Richard Pryor, was this thing that he did. I think it's called Live and Smoke or something like that.
Up in
Smoking.
Live and Smoking?
Live and Smoking, is that what it is? I think it is.
It was Live on the Sunset.
No. This is his first actual video recording of a set that he was going to do. It was so fucked up. He bombed. Mm-hmm. It's on YouTube. I think it's called Live and Smoking. I mean, for anybody who's a comedian and wants to get inspired, meaning if you know, watch this shit and you realize that everybody who does stand up, you know, starts somewhere, and it's not that easy. And it's, to me, it's just inspirational because, you know, you think that you have to be funny all the time and all that stuff. And part of it is, you know, you're trying to find your voice. It's the awkwardness of it. It's the, you know, and there's moments that you're gonna fuck up and all that stuff. We have about 3 minutes or so, but I wanted to ask
you. Damn, that went fast.
I know. It always goes fast here on the NPR, on the Notorious Motherfucking Public
Radio. Hey, Jeremy, give me another 10.
Yo, Jeremy, give me another 5, but we can't because.
Give me a beat.
Yo. So I wanted to ask you, like, really quick. What are the biggest challenges that you have faced, not just as a comedian, but just as a transplant in Boston and, you know, doing comedy and finding your way there, like in a minute or so? Let me know, you know, I'm curious.
The biggest obstacle is, my biggest obstacle in my entire life has been me, you know, dealing with that. But as far as moving out there and all of that, I think, just settling in, getting used to the people there. You know, the people are kind of
they're like a little lobster.
They're like a little crusty. You know, they're really warm and soft on the inside. Right. They're like bread, but
no,
on the outside,
crusty.
You know, you gotta kind of break the shell a little bit. And then they're hilarious and they're awesome.
They're New Englanders.
They're amazing.
They're New Englanders.
But in the beginning, so it's kind of hard to just like, cause in Los Angeles, run around, you know, and talk to people, but
the hardest obstacle, I guess, the people and the culture, it's
a culture shock.
So you're waiting tables at Smith and Walensky now, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So why don't you just let your cock pop out in between the zipper when you go up to a table and when you serve them, you say, can I help you?
Right.
What can I get you?
No, you know what's great is that we wear these aprons. My cock's already out and they don't know it.
So rip a hole in it.
It's beautiful.
So by the way, it's called Richard Pryor Live and Smoking.
Live and Smoking.
Smoking.
So you're right.
S-M-O-K-I-N. Mm-hmm. And if you got to watch this because it's inspirational because you see one of the fucking giants of stand-up comedy literally eating cock. Yeah. on stage.
No, I think I rented that. Actually,
dude, it's ridiculous.
I think I rented it and I turned it off after like 10 or 15 minutes.
It was so uncomfortable.
Yeah, I was like, what is this? This is...
It was so uncomfortable.
Yeah, it was not good.
Hey, I wanted to see if I could do this real quick.
Oh,
so,
no.
So I wanted to plug in Siri. Hold on a second. I want to ask Siri something. Now she's talking.
Wake up, bitch.
Oh, she said, that's not nice. I wanted you to suck my ass. She said, that's not nice. Hold on a second. What's my name, Siri? It says, now Siri's not available.
Siri not available.
Well, fuck yourself.
Connect to the internet.
Wait a minute. That's some British fucking imposter. It's a spy, Siri.
What's my name?
You're Nestor, but you asked me to call you Freak Freak Y'all.
That's just Freak Freak Y'all. That's my name. Yo, so like that concludes our show. We got about 30 seconds. Is there anything you want to say? You want to say fuck you to somebody? You want to say, hey, it's good to see you?
Man, I just wanted to say to everybody in Los Angeles, from the L to the motherfucking A, that I love all of you and I love this city. And, you know, it's just become my home after 21 years. And I'm looking forward to kind of, you know, melting into Boston a little bit too. But I love being back. Thank you.
I love LA. I love LA. Yeah. I fucking love, you know, LA. I'm a New York transplant.
I had to
I
leave
LA.
To appreciate it. Yeah. You know?
I love LA. You were even praising the fucking drivers on the way here. That was
compared
hilarious.
To Boston drivers.
That was hilarious.
Oh my God.
Anyway, we ran out of time. If you are new to the show, this is your first episode. Thank you very much for tuning in. Welcome to the show. Make sure you come to the weplayradio.com website and check out the rest of the shows. We got some really cool shows. Make sure you go to iTunes and let everybody you know go to iTunes and subscribe to the Nestorius Public Radio Show. Downloads is what counts, motherfucker. You know what I'm saying? So like our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nestorius Public Radio. And, you know, do that shit. Come back. See us. Come up and see us sometime.
We play radio.
Encourage me the whole way along. Ow. I ain't doing nothing but talking shit.